Welcome to everyone listening across the United States, all around the world on the internet, east and west, north and south, hither and thither, to and fro, back and forth. Welcome. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, we have two of the great researchers with us, Peter LaVenda and Scott Walter from America Unearthed. But more on that in a bit. First, I wanted to take a minute and tell you how I got here. Late night AM radio is one of the treasures that we have in this country. And no matter where you live, no matter where you are, chances are you have somebody that kept you up late at night, taking you on a journey. Well, you had to keep that radio turned down. Didn't want to wake up your parents next door in the room. But you know what? You wanted to learn something. You wanted to be taken on a journey. You wanted to discover, answer questions for yourself. And that's what I want to do here tonight with you. I wanted a show to do just that, to discover, to question, to learn. And my show on Fade to Black on the Dark Matter Radio Network does just that every night. And George became a fan. He couldn't help himself. One night last May, he called into the show as a fan. And I said, George. He said, Jimmy. And I said, okay. So here we are today. But I said, George, who can I have on? What can I do? And he said, Jimmy, do whatever you want. So tonight, we have on two of the great researchers, Peter LaVenda, Sinister Forces, The Secret Space Program, and his new book. And also, Scott Walter will be joining us shortly, America Unearthed Season 3. But first, I'd like to bring on Stephen Bassett of PRG, and he's got some breaking news. Stephen, how are you tonight? You with us?
I'm just fine, Jimmy, and congratulations on your new role with Coast to Coast.
Oh, it's a fantastic, it's a long road, but it's all about you and PRG, Steve, and you've been really working really hard, and this week, you and I have been talking all week about this, and what can we do? Where are we with disclosure? What's the good news?
All right, well, November the 5th, Paradigm Research Group launched the Congressional Hearing Initiative. It is and will be the most comprehensive effort ever to get congressional hearings on the extraterrestrial issue for the scores of military agency political witnesses that have been ready to testify for nearly 20 years now. We, on November the 5th, we shipped a 10-DVD, 30-hour video record of the entire citizen hearing on disclosure held in April-May 2013, where 42 witnesses testified. The six former members of Congress for 30 hours over 5 days and 20 sessions, 40 panels. The evidence was extraordinary. The impact on the former members of Congress was extraordinary. It was considered a seminal event. Now, that record is on its way to the United States Congress as part of a three-month effort to finally get hearings for these witnesses. Now, the launch of this on the 5th is being accompanied by what we call a tweet storm, a social media campaign. We have a website, faxonwashington.org, faxonwashington.org, where anyone can go and very quickly learn that they can send a tweet, or post on the Facebook page of about two-thirds of the House and Senate. It gives how you can get to those pages, find the icons, and do that. There also is a link to the email form pages where they can email all of the Senate and at least their representative in Congress, their congressional representative. We are asking people to, not just today, but as often as possible over the next 30 days, starting immediately, to start sending these tweets, hashtag disclosure, posting to the Facebook pages of these members or sending them Facebook messages and also sending them email addresses. And the message is simple. There is a DVD set on its way. You need to look at this DVD set. You need to look at this information. Mr. Bassett will be trying to meet with your offices later this month. Meet with him. And we want congressional hearings finally, 46 years after the last congressional hearing on this issue in 1968. It's time for the Congress to get involved. And we're also going to try to bring the media, the mainstream media, into this issue as much as possible so that everywhere a staffer on the Hill looks, they're going to be saying something about this campaign. This is the best shot we've had to get congressional hearings, I think, ever, and, well, since 68, and If we can get a commitment on one of the more of the committees to hold the hearings for these witnesses, I believe that the political press in Washington will bite down finally on this issue, take off their leash, and go after the government with the questions that must be asked, in which case the truth embargo could be over by February, finally, of 2015, and we finally get an announcement from the U.S. president that there is, in fact, an extraterrestrial presence. So facts on Washington.org, information about the citizen hearing at citizenhearing.org, and, of course, the main page of paradigmresearchgroup.org. These are the three key sites that are in play.
You know, we support you. I support you. You know that. And it's such a difficult position that you're in. But is 2015, Stephen, is this finally our year for disclosure?
We've got the window. We've got the witnesses ready. We have the extraordinary video record of the citizen hearing on disclosure, which takes all of the political risk out of this. We have a Congress that desperately needs something important and nonpartisan to do to restore it, the faith of the American people in it, which now holds it in a esteem of about 11%. We have a new Congress coming in with a chance to make history, but I'll be also talking to some of the members that just lost their elections to see if they like to make some history and do something important on their way out the door. We have an excellent opportunity, but we need the support of the American people. Now, the tweets are starting to run about 1,000 an hour. We need to quadruple that. We need to get to 10,000 an hour. And all we're asking is send these short tweets to as many of the members of Congress as you have the time. Hashtag disclosure. Do it today. Do it tomorrow. Don't worry. They can't tell who's sending 1, 2, 4, or 5. Post on their Facebook pages. These senators and House members also send them quick email messages. And those messages and the information is all on facts on Washington.org.
facts on Washington.org. Stephen Bassett, you've got the toughest job in the country. Thank you for coming on.
You're welcome, Jimmy. Good luck.
All the best. All right. When we come back after this short break, Scott Walter, America on Earth. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Geologist Scott Walter has been the president of American Petrographic Services since 1990. He has been responsible for the independent petrographic analysis testing laboratory where the Kensington Ruin Stone was brought for investigation in 2000. He has been the principal petrographer for 5,000 investigations throughout the U.S. and around the world, including the evaluation of fire-damaged concrete at the Pentagon following the attacks of September 11th, 2001. He is now in his official third season on H2 with America Unearthed, which premiered last night. I'd like to welcome to Coast to Coast, Scott Walter. Scott, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you?
It's all about you. Tell me, were you sitting around with the family last night watching the premiere? How'd that go for you?
Yes, I was. My son was over, his girlfriend, his roommate, and one of our shooters, Colin Trinan, was over, and we watched the premiere. And call me a homer, but I thought it was great. I knew how the story would go, and I understood how it would end. But you know, I always like to see how they cut it together, and I was really impressed. I thought it was great, and I hope everybody that watched it did too.
Well, I was going to text you last night in real time because I know that we were watching it together. I had the East Coast feed. And okay. Pretty challenging show, pretty challenging subject matter with Davy Crockett and going right there in the Alamo. How did you get the tip? How did that info come in on that? Because it is a pretty hot topic and one that was obviously going to get challenged by academia.
Well, I don't know what they're going to say. I mean, the people that contacted us were the people that had the documents. And you know, you saw that I went through them, and I don't know what a person can say. I mean, here they are, and his name is on this land deed. It's signed by the then President James Buchanan. There was a newspaper article that talked about him surviving the Alamo. It described his wounds, that he was recovering. And, you know, what we tried to do in the show was look at the backstory to see if everything made sense. Did it fit together that this guy, who was 50 years old at the time, had a remarkable career in many ways, was an American hero back at that time, not just later on. But it did. It all seemed to fit together to support this idea that he survived the Alamo, possibly through Masonic connections that we know Santa Anna used to spare himself. So the deeper we dug, the more things seemed to fit together.
One of the more shocking moments of the show was just that the Freemason, you know, despair signal. And when you went and checked that out, you couldn't get them to reveal what that was. Did they ever tell you?
Well, Jack sure didn't. Jack Roberts, who I interviewed at the Scottish Rite Temple, you know, he took an obligation and an oath, and he wasn't going to tell me. But I've done enough research to know, and actually I have talked with Freemasons who have shared some information. And so I know that we have the symbol generally, right? There's some details that were not included, but it was enough that that's pretty much the way it was done, not just by Freemasons today or during wars that we've had in this country in the past, but this goes all the way back to the Knights Templar.
And one of the things that I thought was interesting, here you have two enemies that, you know, have fought to the bitter end at the Alamo. And Freemasons come into play, and suddenly there's something a bit deeper going on there. Do you think that was enough to get Davy Crockett out of trouble?
Well, absolutely. I've researched this topic before, and certainly during the Civil War, Revolutionary War, and many other conflicts that we've had, not just here, but in other places where it was documented, this has happened more frequently than people think. I mean, the Confederates and the Union soldiers were sparing each other when appropriate if they realized that they were dealing with another Freemason. So it's not uncommon. It's actually well documented. And actually, something I posted on my website today was a story that was told to me by Jack Roberts, and that was that one of the colonels, I believe, or no, Captain Dickinson, who did not survive the Alamo, but his wife and infant child did. And what I've been told by Jack is that the reason she survived is her husband gave her his Masonic apron and said, make sure you show it to them, and maybe you'll be spared. And indeed she was. She, her daughter, and I believe a black slave were the only ones to survive the Alamo.
With anything that would be discovered while you're doing the taping, let's just say it could be David Crockett or the Ark of the Covenant is found, how are you bound? You can't do a press release that very single day? Do you have to wait till the end of the season?
Well, you know what? That's a great question, Jimmy, because one of the things that I pondered with some fellow researchers, my wife and people that I'm very close to, is what would we do, let's say, like you said, if we found the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail, whatever that, or the Templar treasure, whatever it might be. I mean, what do you do if you find that? I mean, the first question is, who does it belong to? And who would you trust with it? And, you know, we had this conversation just a couple weeks ago. It's funny you would mention that. And you know what we decided? We decided we'd probably cover it back up and not tell anyone.
So, is that the protocol? Let's deal with this later.
To be quite honest with you, that's probably what we would conclude. I mean, if you find something like that, of course, it would be, I mean, beyond amazing. So I think what you'd really have to do is, after the initial excitement, you'd need to collect your thoughts and talk to people. And, you know, if you really found one of these historical treasures that was, you know, valuable beyond belief, you really have to, you know, think very carefully about that. Who does it belong to, and what's the right thing to do? This isn't just a national treasure. This would be a world treasure, and it belongs to everyone. So,
well, do you have to?
I don't know what the answer is.
Right, and do you have to call a government agency? Is there something in line like that? Do you have to get Washington involved, or can you keep, you know, the discovery to yourself and do your own release on it?
Well, I this is uncharted water for me, and I really don't know what the proper protocol would be. I mean, we'd all pull our heads together, get together with the production company and the network, and try to decide what would be the appropriate thing to do. I mean, you know, there's obviously if something amazing was found, it would be a great story, and we'd love to, you know, the network would want to do a show on it. But on the other hand, from my perspective, I mean, that's secondary to, first of all, the security of the artifact and to the history it represents. That's the most important thing. So you kind of caught me off guard with that one. It's a great question, and, you know, I'm not sure what the right protocol is. I mean, quite frankly, do I trust the government? I certainly don't trust the Smithsonian Institution. So what is the right thing to do? It's a great question. I'd really have to think long and hard about it.
When you were on with me last over on Fade to Black, when you were on with me, we talked. We did five questions together, as you remember.
Yep.
How close are you? And I want you to tease the audience, and then we'll come back after the break and discuss this a little bit further. But there's been a discovery out there that you're working on. Just give us a little taste.
Oh my gosh, boy. Gosh, Jimmy, you're tough, man. Well, I think you did ask some questions, and you got close. You got pretty close. And let's just put it this way. There is something that we're working on that I think is one of the certainly for me would be one of the, well, it would be the biggest discovery that I'll ever be involved in. The only thing I'll say is that final confirmation of this is probably going to be 9 to 12 months away. So there's some work that needs to be done. It needs to be handled the right way, and we're going to do it the best we can.
You sound nervous, Scott.
Well, I'm nervous. The only thing that's making me nervous is I just don't want to tip my hand. I'm confident of what we're talking about, and I know that it's going to be great. But you know, it is important, and it needs to be handled appropriately. And I want to be sure that we do it the right way.
Is it something that's going to be on season 4 of American Unearthed, or will it happen in season 3 still?
Well, let's put it this way. No, it won't be. We will inkle around the edges at the end of this season. But if we do get the go ahead for season 4, which we don't officially have yet, but we're guardedly optimistic. I don't take anything for granted, but I think there's a good chance that we will. And if so, I think we probably will work on it in season 4.
As we head into the break, we all seem to feel we know the ending of shows like America Unearthed. There hasn't been a big press release, you know, announcing a huge discovery. Why is that? And is there going to be a great ending to something in season 3?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think already in the first two seasons, we have worked on things that were more than worthy of press releases. But for some reason, the media doesn't feel that way. I mean, it goes back to the same old problems we have with the Kensington Runestone, the Tucson lead artifacts. I mean, I told Chuck Bent, the grandson of the discoverer of the Tucson lead artifacts, that they were 100% genuine, and there's no question that they are. These are 8th and 9th century artifacts that were made by somebody who came from Europe. I don't know why they aren't shouting from the hilltops, "This is amazing." They are one of the most incredible group of artifacts that's ever been found in the world, period.
With the United States and America Unearthed, tourists go to Giza, they go to Rome, they go to Greece. We have the same stuff here in the United States. Why is it ignored? It seems like you're the only flag waver about all of these discoveries, myths and legends.
Well, you know what? It's complicated on one hand, but it's quite simple on another. I mean, when our country was first settled, back at the time of that wonderful policy, Manifest Destiny, there were some rules that were laid down by who exactly, I don't know, But at the highest levels of our government, they said that, you know, there was nobody here before Chris, and therefore this is ours for the taking. So as expansion progressed and things were obviously found, the mounds were dug into, artifacts were found that didn't fit with the premise. So what do you do about it? What can you do? Well, the only thing that could happen at that time is you make it go away and just stick with the plan. And I believe that that policy is what, caused these things to be buried. And only now are we beginning to realize the incredible history that we've had on this continent for thousands of years.
Hold it right there, Scott. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be back with Scott Walter right after this. Wow, Graham Bonnet Rainbow. Somebody's going to think I set that one up. Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Host of Fade to Black on the Dark Matter Radio Network. You can catch me 7 to 10 through the week. Filling in tonight, guesting here at Coast to Coast. It is an honor. Coming up, the top of the hour, we have with us Peter Lavenda. His new book, The Hitler Legacy, The Nazi Cult in Diaspora. How it was organized, how it was funded, and why it remains a threat to global security in the age of terrorism. It was just released yesterday. It is also available on Amazon. But next, we have more with Scott Walter of America Unearthed. For the last two seasons, he's been traveling around the country trying to uncover some of the craziest mysteries we have right now in the United States. Where does he get his information? What does he think? How does he do it? Where did the stories even come from? Well, you know what? It's about the Knights Templar and the Vikings getting here first, I think. And I'll be back in a moment with Scott Walter. You can follow me on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. Email me right now during the show, jimmy@coasttocoastam.com. Be back right after this. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. Email me throughout the show, jimmy@coasttocoastam.com. Scott Walter, America Unearthed, Season 3. Scott, pyramids. We have Egyptian caves in the Grand Canyon. We have mounds. We have Vikings. We probably have ships that you've discovered. When is it going to end, and who is researching out there besides yourself?
Well, when is it going to end? I don't know when it's going to end, but the research is really, it's broken up into a couple different entities. A lot of the shows we do are based on research that I've done. A lot of it is based on research of writers at Committee Films, who is the production company that does a great job making the show and making me look good, that's for sure. And sometimes it comes from the network. They'll give us topics and say, hey, we want you to take a look at this for us. And so we do that. And I have to say that, of course, you know, the stuff that I think is great is always my stuff, right? But there have been just about every time when it's been a network idea or somebody else's idea, you know, I go, well, I don't know about that. And then once we start to dig into it, I'm always surprised. And I have to admit, there are many times it turns out something I wasn't that wild about turns out to be just fascinating as heck. I mean, the one example I think you and I talked about before was the rock wall in Texas. I mean, I thought, well, what is this all about? And I was a little skeptical going down there, but it turned out to be a fascinating wall down there. And we got to the bottom of it. And I think I made quite a number of people upset with me, but they were hoping I would say that it was man-made. And believe me, I would love for it to have been man-made, but unfortunately, it wasn't. So
I got so much feedback from that show about the Dallas Rock Wall. And I would say that the public is divided right down the middle, but they want to believe. And I don't know how you constantly battle just that with Orthodox academia. Are they constantly checking and rechecking you and coming at you?
Well, you know, Some are, but you know, they do it under this veil of secrecy. I mean, I have people come on my blog, and you know, they're always anonymous when they challenge me with something. You know, I just say to them, I go, just use a fake name for crying out loud. I mean, if you can't put your name onto something, it's hard for me to take it, you know, too seriously. But yeah, they come after me pretty hard, but I just say, you know, when they start getting nasty or calling me names, I just say, look, when you're done with the nonsense, do you want to get serious? And then when you're ready to get serious, let's talk about the facts or the evidence, and let's get after it. So, and most of them, to their credit, do come around and they say, okay, well, let's talk about it. But
who generally, well, that's a great point, Scott. I didn't mean to interrupt, but
that's okay.
Who generally has more facts, you or them?
Well, if it's the subject matter that we're working on, almost always it's me.
And they can't back up if they're trying to debunk, and which is what you're always up against. Are mm-hmm. they backing up that with fact or conjecture?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, what happens, and this isn't, you know, unique to me, is they can't refute the facts. I mean, depending on what we're talking about, if we have a solid case like the Rune Stone or the Bat Creek or the Tucson Lead artifacts, where the facts are voluminous from multiple disciplines and they all are consistent with one conclusion, then they can't refute it with any facts because there aren't any facts to refute it. And how can there be? Because there's only one right answer, so there can only be facts to support the correct answer. So if they can't beat you with the facts, what they do is they attack you personally. So, but this is an age-old technique that people have been using in their argumentation all the time. And if they can't, you know, hey, I got a good one for you. You'll like this. A trial lawyer once told me this. He said, if the facts aren't on your side, argue the law. If the law isn't on your side, argue the facts. If neither one is on your side, then just argue. So the point is that if you have somebody who's good at with argumentation, they'll find something to argue. The facts are irrelevant.
Well, that's one of the reasons why America on Earth is so interesting. I think that what you try to do, and I could be wrong, but you're trying to present it almost like you're in the court of law. And is that your frame of mind? You want
Absolutely.
To present your best evidence to win the case?
Jimmy, you hit the nail on the head, because you have to remember, I come from the professional world, not the academic world. And every single project, you mentioned 5,000 projects, the Pentagon, I've worked on murder cases, it doesn't matter. When I write a report, I have to be able to be prepared to testify in a court of law under oath to the work that I've done. And if I draw a conclusion, I'm ready to go. And I do it quite often. And that's the bar that I have to meet. And I have to tell you, if there's a skeptic out there or an opponent that wants to take me on in a mock trial with the Kensington Runestone, Back Creek, any of these other artifacts, bring it on, because I know what will happen. I've done this. I've been in court so many times. I know exactly what will happen. And nobody's taken me up on it yet because they know what will happen. If they look at the facts, they won't even show up.
Have you ever had an episode where you just had to back up and say, we can't do this?
Not the episode itself, but I can tell you there have been many times when I basically said, I'm not saying that, or I'm not doing this because it's not appropriate. And I'm often correcting the writers when they, you know, for voiceovers, you know, when you see me driving the car and I'm talking, you know, the words are important. When you use the word prove, that to me is conclusive. I'm always saying, look, we can't say prove because we haven't proven it yet. We haven't reached a conclusion yet. We use the term evidence or fact. But you got to remember, these people don't come from the world that I come from, so it's my job to make sure that they're getting it as right as possible.
I think that with our knowledge today as a society, I think that we all agree that maybe Columbus wasn't here first. Could have been anybody. Could have been the Swedes. The Kensington shows that as a possibility. Right. We're looking at the Vikings. Who do you think was here first?
Well, you know, the answer to that is a big, I have no idea. I absolutely am convinced that the Phoenicians were here thousands of years ago. There may have been cultures, I'm sure there were cultures before them that maybe we don't even know about that were here prior to them. But I'm absolutely convinced there were cultures coming not just to America, but we were going over there. I mean, in one of the episodes we did about the serpent mound, and there was another serpent mound in Scotland, what I learned from somebody who I really respect is that native wise men and natives all over and all the continents of the world have been going back and forth, exchanging information, learning from each other, teaching across the continents. Now, this may seem fantastic, but to me, I'm not a bit surprised. I absolutely think it's true, and it's probably been going on for thousands of years, if not tens of thousands of years.
What about the petroglyphs out west, you know, 8,000 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Where did those come from? And there isn't a general consensus. Where do you think they came from and originated?
Well, I do think that a lot of the petroglyphs that we see on this continent probably were made by local native tribes and cultures going back as far as, like you say, 8,000 years. And most of these petroglyph sites are probably teaching centers. This is where people would learn ancient knowledge. Certainly astronomy would be one of the things that they would learn. But these were areas where they were teaching certain people that had been selected within their cultures to receive this information. And like I said, petroglyphs are found all over the world, so these teaching sites are all over the world.
There are spirals. There are concentric circles. It looks like solar system, star information. But it was predating what was going on in Iraq at some point, maybe even as much as 5,000 years. Where did they get this information from?
Even farther back than that, at Göbekli Tepe.
Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah, I'm not pronouncing it right. I apologize. But if I remember right, I think they're saying that site could date back 10,000 years ago. And based on what I see there and some of the literature I've read, this is the information that's being preserved on these carvings is astronomical information. These are star charts or star maps, if you will. And that's what I think a lot of these petroglyphs are. They're simply star maps and you know, they're creation stories and other information.
When you first look at those petroglyphs, and I was checking it out with you this week, I'm looking at them, and it's exactly what it looks like. It looks like star and astronomical information. That is 8,000 years old. Is that how it impacts you when you first walk up on the site?
Well, it does. I think you might be talking about the Judah Cullis Stone.
Yes.
In eastern Tennessee. And, man, when I first saw that thing, I was blown away. It's huge. And it's just covered with cupules and different symbols. And it's just amazing. And it just struck me immediately as a star map. And I can just imagine that for a long time, this is where the wise ones in the various native cultures and maybe people that came from other continents would go, and they would teach and they would learn, and they must have been the most sacred places to their people. Aside from burial mounds, they were probably the most sacred areas.
You're probably best known for the Kensington Runestone, that discovery in 2000. Where are we today with that?
Well, I would say that people are just sort of sitting here waiting for the next big bomb to drop. You know, it's funny, Jimmy, because I sit back and I have to remind myself, oh, yeah, that's right, the world hasn't totally accepted this yet. But to me, it's just an afterthought. Of course it's real. Of course it was carved by a Cistercian monk, probably traveling with the Templars and traveling with Native Americans, because obviously a party making it to the interior of our continent, they're not going to get anywhere unless the natives let them. So they had to have a very close relationship. In fact, they did. They assimilated with the natives, and that's why they had so much success here. And they did it quietly. They did it in secret. And I think if academics and people just opened up their minds and realized this thing is the Rosetta Stone of our continent, and it really is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, once they accept this thing, it's going to trigger a bunch of dominoes falling, and those dominoes are going to go to some really interesting places.
Who isn't accepting it? It's been 14 years. It hasn't been debunked. Who isn't accepting it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess the media, even in our town here in Minneapolis, they did an article on me here about 6 months ago, and it was a very positive article about the show, and of course it talked about the runestone. And an academic wrote in from a local college, and she basically said, oh, we don't need to talk about fantasies and all this nonsense. And it's like, she didn't talk about the evidence. It's almost like a religion within certain disciplines in academia. They just believe that it's a fake because they've been hearing that for so long. If they talked about the evidence, it would be a different story, but they never do. And I don't know what the proper way to handle this is. It's a real mystery. I mean, it's a problem within academia. It's a broken system as far as I'm concerned when they can't look at somebody who's, I mean, I'm a scientist. I've run a laboratory. I've done work for every government and in many countries and the Pentagon. I was assigned to that project, but I can't look at a inscription on a rock and figure out if it's old. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Well, it's now been 130 years, and I think the best evidence with the Kensington runestone is who knew about 130 years ago the Hooked X, that type of language, and the ability to, where does the education come from to create that rock in the middle of Minnesota in 1870? It doesn't exist, and I think that is the strongest evidence.
It didn't exist anywhere. I mean, they had lost all this information. You got to remember, a lot of the runestone is allegory, code, symbolism, and you know they're using secret symbols that the scholars for 100 years said never existed. And lo and behold, that we found them all. And then of course they say, oh well, you found them in documents that date back to the middle of the 19th century, so they must be fake. And it's just like the answer is always it's a fake. So no matter what you put forth, they'll find a way to refute it instead of looking at the obvious, the consistency of the evidence that points to authenticity. And the problem is, to be quite frank with you, most of the people and the disciplines that have passed judgment on the runestone were not hard scientists. They were linguists. They were anthropologists. They were historians. With all due respect, these are wonderful disciplines, but they are not trained in the scientific method, and it shows.
You've been sucked into the world of the Hooked X. I mean, your website is called the Hooked X.
Yes.
Besides the United States with the Kensington runestone, where else around the world has the Hooked X shown up in other cultures?
Well, I can tell you this. It's only shown up in association with two groups, modern-day Freemasons and the Knights Templar. And that's it. Those are the only two groups where this symbol has been found. So when people tell me I'm crazy to associate it with the Knights Templar, what do you want me to do? The evidence points only to them and the modern-day Freemasons, which, of course, those two groups are connected. So we know that's where it came from, or at least that's who used it. And now I think we know exactly where it came from. That's one of the little surprises that we have in store that I can't tell you. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
it's only the whole country and world listening. It's just between you and I, Scott.
I know. I'm sorry, everybody. But it's coming. I promise it's coming, and it will be good, and I'm not blowing this up. This is not some big, blow up for a letdown. This will be big news when it happens. I promise.
Yeah, you promised you would do it with me. You're still sticking to that, right?
I will. I promise you.
Okay.
You've been great. I appreciate this opportunity, and I will. I'm a man of my word, so I will do it.
What's up next for Scott Walter?
Well, right now we're looking at some other opportunities to maybe be involved in some other television. I'm hoping we get renewed for America on Earth. That's my top priority, and I really want to continue to do the show. I love working with Committee Films. You know, H2 and History Channel have been absolutely supportive, and I just think that we're making the best show that we've ever made. I just love last night what I saw. I was just thrilled. So I want to keep doing that. I do have some book projects that I'm working on. And my wife has a new book that's coming out with Alan Butler, my good friend who's appeared on several of our episodes. And we're digging into some really fun stuff. So we got some fun things coming down the pike.
Scott Walter, America Unearthed, Saturday nights on H2. Thank you, Scott. All the best. Keep rolling that rock uphill. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. You can email me during the show, jimmychurch@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with Peter Lavenda right after this.